Moncrief on News Talk. Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone.
The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Simon Tierney joins us once again for a subject. I suppose it's coincidental given that we were talking about hospitals with Hazel Chu, but it is a pure coincidence we're talking about today, baby formula. And I suppose a lot of people might know from our regular slots with Mairead Lavery that we make an awful lot of baby formula in this country.
We do. We produce 10% of the world's supply of baby formula, which for a small country is an extraordinary statistic. They say that perhaps 1 in 7 babies in the world are fed by formula, which began its life here on Irish shores. Sean, so yeah, even 35% of our dairy exports are that formula. So the three big formula companies, Abbott, Danone, of course, which make Aptamil, and Wyeth, which make SMA, they all manufacture here in this country. So it's the first question that came into my mind when I started researching this is, what did people do before formula was invented in the mid to late 19th century? And of course, there's an immediate obvious answer to that, which is that they breastfed.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't the case. Yeah. Would that have depended upon how well got you were in terms of whether you could afford an alternative to breastfeeding?
Yeah. Do you know what? I thought that in my head, what we're talking about essentially here is non-maternal breastfeeding, or wet nursing, as it's colloquially known. This is what preceded baby formula. And in my head, Sean, I don't know why, this perhaps informed by movies or literature, I had this idea in my head that wet nurses were very much the preserve of the kind of Victorian high society.
Me too.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that was the case to some extent, but it was much more pervasive than that. This is something that was done in the working classes in France, in particular. Like, I was really astonished to discover that in 18th century France, 90% of babies were wet nursed. Only 10% of mothers breastfed their own children in the 18th century. And the reason for this, in particular in France at that time, is because of the dire economic situation, low wages, etc. Even working class women, new mothers, had to go straight back to work after giving birth. And it was better for them to find even poorer women to wet nurse their children. Then the inevitable question came into my head, well, how could these very poor women just suddenly start wet nursing? How did it develop into an industry? And it really was an industry in 18th and 19th century Europe. This is something that was heavily advertised, and I'll come to the Irish context in a moment to localise it. But I wondered, well, how were all these women able to breastfeed? And I had to look at a little bit of the science of this, Sean, and it is possible, stop me if I'm being very ignorant here, because I didn't realise this, but it is possible for women who haven't given birth to breastfeed. They can elicit lactation. This is why women who adopt children, or in some surrogacy situations, they can still breastfeed if the child is brought to the breast on a regular basis to nurse. You can elicit lactation in some women. And this allowed women in 18th century France to take on wet nursing as a profession.
Right. Okay. But probably not all women could do it, but I suppose some women could. So that became their job.
Indeed. And it was so widespread that in 1769, the Bureau of Wet Nurses was established in Paris to kind of try and regulate the industry and the standards. Indeed. Now, things take a dark turn. And I wanted to mention this because this is an aspect, a chapter in America's history of slavery, which is something that I hadn't heard about, but is particularly disturbing. It's a whole new avenue of the enslavement of black women in America, which is just so dark. But it was common in the southern states, in the Confederate states, in the 19th century, for black enslaved women to be forced, to be mandated by their owners to wet nurse their white master's children. Mm-hmm. This would often be done to the neglect of their own children, or perhaps more commonly, the mother's child and the master's white child would be breastfed simultaneously. Now, I came across evidence that this was quite strictly regulated, in the sense that there could never be cross-contamination of the breasts, because this was akin to blacks and whites sharing a water fountain. And we know how contentious water fountains yeah. were in the history of the Jim Crow South, even before in antebellum southern states. And this is yet another horrible, dark chapter in that history.
I especially came across, since in many cases, the black, the white kid and the black kid were possibly siblings in many cases as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes it even more grotesque. So in Ireland, you mentioned that we went in for a bit of wet nursing here.
Yeah, wet nursing. I did a deep dive into the Irish newspaper archive, which I often do for this slot, and it was very illuminating, Sean. I couldn't believe the amount of advertisements I found for wet nurses in the 19th century in Irish newspapers all across the country. Not just advertisements for women looking for wet nurses, but also wet nurses advertising their own services. I found one. I just wanted to give you one example. This is from the Irish Examiner, or I suppose the Cork Examiner would have been then, in 1861. And this is a woman. She describes herself, quote unquote, as a young, healthy woman of the best character, a Roman Catholic, seeking a situation as a wet nurse or dry nurse or housemaid or general servant, will meet immediate attention. But the ubiquity of these ads in the Irish press, right into the 20th century, I must add, even 1920s, 1930s, I found evidence of ads from that period. It just goes to show that wet nursing was really, really widespread, even in Ireland. Now, when did all this change?
Yeah.
It all changes towards the end of the 19th century. The real impetus for a baby formula comes about when what we see happening is there's two problems. First of all, women start to find shame in breastfeeding, particularly high society women. They don't want to be associated with it. They believe that if they are seen breastfeeding, that they will be they will be perceived as uncultured, poor even. And there's a kind of a social contamination about it. Now, that changes in the late 19th century because it starts to be associated with being an unhygienic activity, wet nursing as well. So it's seen as often prostitutes will get involved in wet nursing, and there'll be contamination through the transmission of syphilis to babies. And there's a major kind of public health concern around wet nursing. So those two motivating factors lead to an urgent need for some sort of replacement, and this is baby formula. So in the mid-19th century, there's a chemical analysis done of cow's milk to try and understand what is the problem with just giving cow's milk to a baby? Because people were doing that, and then the babies were getting sick. And the reason for that they discovered, by this German chemist discovered, is that cow's milk had a higher protein content and lower carbohydrate content. But crucially, that cow's milk, the curds in cow's milk, is larger to the curds in a mother's milk. And that makes it very undigestible. That's why you can't give just straight cow milk to a newborn. So another German chemist by the name of Justus von Liebig, he came up with the world's first baby formula in 1860. It was called Liebig's soluble infant food, or in some countries, colloquially, it was just called soup for babies. So what was in it? It was wheat flour, cow's milk, malt flour and potassium carbonate, and you added that to cow's milk, liquid cow's milk. It wasn't until a few years later in 1870 that Nestlé came along, who of course have a long history in this industry, and they created the first infant formula that you could just add to water.
Right.
And that is the real beginning of a brand new industry.
Yeah, and I suppose, it's very interesting in the context that now, I suppose the push is to try and get as many people as possible to breastfeed, because breastfeeding is proven hands down to be the best way of to get your baby in life. But it's funny that in the 1960s, it was kind of being this big feminist project. It was so liberating for women. They didn't have to breastfeed anymore. You could just like pop it in a bottle.
That's a really important aspect of it, because it was liberating to women. And, you know, this has massive historical parallels, Sean, when you think about what I was saying a few moments ago about 18th century France. Wet nurses meant that women could go out to work and they didn't have to feed their babies. Baby formula did the exact same thing 200 years later.
Yeah. And breastfeeding, somebody said, because when you were talking about breastfeeding, somebody sent in a text saying, oh my God, that is the hand that rocks the cradle, where your one breastfeeds the child that wasn't hers. Which, even whenever that movie was out, the 80s or 90s, that was viewed as kind of a scary, horrific thing. It was accepted as normal 100 years before.
Yeah,
that.
Rebecca De Mornay, that scene really chilled so many people when she took the child and breastfed it herself. But, you know, that would have been... That, like, the idea of wet nursing is just like, we find it really unusual.
Taboo.
We're
now
so removed from it now, but it was so normal back then.
A listener in Selbridge says their childhood home is in Bishop Auckland in the UK. People know it from the train line. There's a park there called Titty Bottle Park. It's surrounded by posh Victorian houses, and the nannies would have walked and fed their charges in the park, hence the name.
Wow.
There you are. That's the Brits fear. They're so literal about everything. Simon, thanks a million for coming into us. Simon Tierney there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show.
Moncrief on News Talk.